He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
Yes, it is. And we finally got some winter weather coming our way. And
I think first thing out of the box, somebody who shall remain nameless because I don't know the person's name and I wouldn't say it anyway, went a little bit too fast down his or her hill with his or her Suburban and, you know, hit a wall because that's what happens.
Well, once a Suburban goes down a hill and there's no grip, it's 6,000 plus pounds of a lot of steel going down a hill, and there's not a lot of ways to stop it. And a wall or a ditch will do that, and the outcome is not always very pretty.
People don't seem to, and maybe this is a generalization that's unfair, but people do not seem to have sufficient connection any longer with their outer world to just even think that, well, maybe I'll go a little more slowly.
Well, I think several things have come into play. You know, we've talked about it before, and there are programs out there that teach you how to drive in difficult conditions, whether it be wet roads or winter conditions where you have snow, ice, black ice. A lot of it, a little of it, roads are cleared or not. I think one of the hardest things is not just knowing how to control the vehicle, which obviously is key, but it's in judging what the conditions really are. And I'd like to think of myself as somebody who can actually drive, but I find myself sometimes in winter conditions where I will be, let's say, driving to Catamount in the morning because I go there on a regular basis on weekends, and I go up 41 and I get into Massachusetts, and the roads look very different from what they are in Connecticut. And the tough part is to determine, is there grip, is there all that liquid salt or whatever it is they put on the road in Massachusetts that just eats cars away? Is there enough of it that I can totally ignore what the conditions were just a mile or two back and drive normally, like if the roads were just wet? Or is this black ice? And sometimes I find myself holding back traffic because I'm really being over cautious. And sometimes somebody will pass me, and sure enough, the road is totally fine. But again, better safe than sorry. You know,
it seems like a better policy.
It's a better policy, right.
That's all. And it sounds, okay, it doesn't sound very appealing. Better safe than sorry. What a bore.
Yeah.
But just the 5,000 pounds, 6,000 pounds of metal.
It happened to me once, going the other way. Totally stupid of me. This was 10, maybe 20 years ago. I had a... for work purposes, I drove a Ford Aerostar, the ugliest minivan
in history.
It was a great vehicle. I loved it. It did everything I needed to do at the time.
It was just ugly.
It was just ugly. But, you know, when you're sitting inside,
you don't see it. So it's not offending you aesthetically.
Yeah.
Just your fellows.
So I was trying to get up somebody's driveway. So I got a good run, and here I go. I'm going up a hill, and it's a steep driveway, and it's a long driveway. And I get there, almost there. You know, I'm 9/10 up the driveway, and that's it. That's as far as I'm going. And I'm saying, okay, well, I'm just going to roll backwards, right? Nice and easy. Well, no, now I have my 6,000 pounds going backwards that I can absolutely not control. And this was a wooded property. And, you know, I went into the woods and I missed a tree by, you know, at the bottom of the driveway by a few inches. And it could have been just very ugly. And it was totally stupid of me. And it's the same with your person in the Suburban.
And in fairness, what you say about not knowing is understandable because I have gone down a hill that regular Music Mountain Road, a hill that I've driven for a long, long time. And I still find myself, because you can't tell what's underneath there. Just the momentum, the downhill gravity, it happens.
I found myself in the same type of scenario in Millerton, on the other side of Millerton, going over the hill, going into Pine Plains, a couple of years ago with my Subaru, and the conditions were all of a sudden it was snow. I don't know if there was ice underneath or not, but you could not have walked down that hill. But it was winter. It had snowed before. And what I ended up doing, and I had a passenger in the car who just thought I was crazy, I put actually my two right wheels on the side of the road because the roads had been plowed. So you had a foot of crud on the side of the road. And I used that as a barrier, as a retainer. Right, exactly. I went down at 2 miles an hour.
Right.
It took me 20 minutes to get down the hill, but I made it.
Right.
And had I tried to stay on the road, I would have ended up in the ditch.
Right.
And I was also committed because by the time I started going down that hill, there was no going back. So I had to go down.
And that does happen to me. So in fairness, while we're talking about this, it's a combination of knowing and doing your best. I think that the objection is a lot of people just, passing on a curve, on an icy road just seems imprudent.
It's knowing the conditions. Once you know the conditions, you can adapt your driving. And
sometimes you can't.
And sometimes it's a lot of fun to drive in the snow. I mean, when it's snowing and there's like 6 inches of snow on the roads and they've been plowed once and then it snows again and it's packed snow but not icy, it's fun. It's a lot of fun. And you can learn a lot. And you can learn a lot about car control without going very fast and with predictable consequences. But again, to me, the hardest part is really determining what those conditions really are. And that's where you have to be careful. That's why I'll get out of my driveway, and if there's nobody on the road, I'll go down the street a bit, and then I'll slam on the brakes and see how long it takes for the car to stop. Or what is it going to do? Is it going to go to the side of the road? Is it going to go straight? Am I able to make a turn? And every few miles, if I have any doubts, I try to do the same thing, assessing conditions.
And I wonder, we talk a lot about, hey, get educated, but I don't. I saw something the other day that just made my little antenna go up, my favorite Martian antenna go up, which was that a lot of kids don't know what a dashboard. They're just not familiar with the.
There's no dashboard anymore.
And, right, and that's fine, I suppose. But just for context and good order's sake, it would seem like you should probably know something, no? Because my issue is this: I don't know what all the dials do. I just know that they're supposed to be, and I've got a very old car.
You still have dials.
And I've got a very old car. But at least they connect me to the fact that, oh, there's temperature. You know, it's one thing you see a flashing red light.
Right.
There's no, speaking of context or assessment, you just talked about something absolutely Jurassic. I get out of my car and I walk on the road to see, who does that?
Yeah, well, I do.
But you know what I mean? There's a reason that you do that, partially because you, frankly, didn't grow up. You grew up someplace where you actually had to do that and where you had to know how to use a car.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it was last week, we were talking about front drive cars and all-wheel drive cars. And I don't think I brought this up, but I remember as a young driver, sometimes not being able to go up the hill with a front drive because I grew up in the 80s. And, that was the big thing, especially in Europe where I grew up. And when it snowed, there was no snow plows and we had no snow tires. So, it was.
You just drove.
Well, we tried.
Or tried.
It was kind of a mess. But I would go up hills, I would go up a hill with a front drive going backwards because now you're putting, we always thought, well, why is the front drive more efficient? Well, because you have the weight of the engine on the wheels. But, if you think of back in the day, a Volkswagen Bug, rear-wheel drive, also has the engine over the wheels. And arguably, that would be just as efficient as a front-drive car. Now, when you're going up a hill, if you're going backwards with a front drive, you're actually accentuating the weight that you're transferring to that front axle, which is now in the back. Does that make any sense?
Yes, because I have a backwards mind, so I can do that. Yeah. The point is, when you are actually driving a car, and this isn't to belabor modernization and improvement and technology. It is, however, to say that you need something more than a computer program to tell you what the conditions are. We see this with weather all the time. The assumption because someone has given you a numeric readout of what an extrapolation of what's going on right now will be is in using that as quality information just doesn't seem, you know, who coming up now is going to know, well, turn the car, go up in reverse.
Well, and
no
come
one.
To think of it, you know, you really this has to be a drastic move in very limited conditions, because if everybody starts driving backwards on the
probably not a great idea.
Probably not a great idea, no. But, you know.
But the point is the thinking is like, all right, I'm here, I'm not going to make it up, but I can do this or not. It's a different type of thinking than, you know, the sheep all driving in a line.
Yeah.
Not that sheep could drive.
Well, some cars probably could, but we're getting back to that. We're circling back to that debate of,
right,
you know, technology and cars. And, you know, now, you still have to make judgment calls. But, you know, the reality is the cars are a lot more efficient now than they used to be. And even a two-wheel drive car, whether front-wheel drive or even rear-wheel drive car. I mean, I've driven rear-wheel drive cars, you know, in the last few years that had snow tires on, that would go up pretty much anything. If you have traction control and you know, good tires, the electronics will do the rest, and they transfer the power to,
the wheel that needs it.
The wheel that can handle
can
it.
Can handle it.
Yeah, that has the grip. So, and again, you know, the main factor, the main thing between the car and the road and the snow or the ice or whatever it is, as we know, the tire, and we get back to whether we should be driving on winter tires or not. And you can have a Suburban or a truck, it can weigh 6,000 pounds or be all-wheel drive. If that that compound, that rubber compound between, you know, that's your tire and how it connects with the road, if it's not an efficient
contact.
Well, you know, everything else goes down the south, exactly.
Or down.
And I would say I plead guilty. I don't drive on winter tires. I drive on all season tires. And yes, I've optimized my search to make sure that they're good tires in the snow and the tread is good, but there's the biggest difference, I think, between winter tires and all season tires is the compound. And there are different compounds of rubber and other synthetic materials in the tire that make those tires literally stick to ice, for instance. And again, ice is, I think, the biggest or the most dangerous all conditions.
Second only to trying to buy a car when you don't know what you're doing. So I'm using that as a poor segue into.
Call Robin.
Do you know? I used to. That's actually.
Oh, many people still do.
And the only reason I say used to is because I haven't, as you know, changed my car for a while. But the fact is that he was and presumably is still able to navigate certain things that I just don't have the wherewithal to.
Well, and he loves doing it too.
And that's the thing.
I mean, he loves the process. Most people hate it.
That's
right. He just loves it.
Because he loves, that's exactly right. But because he loves the process, he's going to go into intricacies that most dealers are just really hoping that they got someone who hates it.
Yeah.
I want $5 off this and $4 off this, and no, you don't need this. And, I mean, it was great.
You know, we get back to buying cars.
But this whole online, element makes
it makes it's like everything else in life these days. It makes everybody an expert, right? And
but that's so.
I mean, doctors hate WebMD because people show up at the doctor's office and tell them what they have and just.
But the whole premise, for example, and this is terrible, and it only happens in this country. The only reason to market all of these medications is so that people will go into their doctor's office and say, hey,
absolutely,
I want blah, blah.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even matter that the side effect is
essentially
death.
We're going on a tangent, but yeah, I Google meds I see on ads for on TV because I'm going like, okay, I've seen this ad like 10 times. I have no idea what this is for. So that's the reverse
right, but
process.
The fact that you're looking at that, I mean, imagine being marketed to so that you'll go demand something that you don't even need because you have, and this is
This is like the now I'm jumping to something else with, you know, car ads. And you, I think you see a lot more than I do for some reason. But
because I watch sports and you don't.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that must be it. But there was a good ad last night on TV for the new GMC pickup truck with this the tailgate opens up in like a staircase. You can just walk up the tailgate. And I honestly don't know if it's a power gate or not, but it's pretty
seen that one
interesting.
Yet.
And the ads is actually pretty funny because a bunch of guys, and it's the song is a song that's easily recognizable. I'm not going to sing it. And you see a gazillion people all over the mountain coming up and down, going moving around with tailgates, you know. And then you see Ford tailgates and Ram tailgates.
It's a European humor thing. I'm getting a thumbs down from the other room.
Oh, he does. Well, he can opinionate.
Everyone is entitled to their own opinion.
Yeah, I mean,
I got, speaking of their own opinion, no opinion, as that used to mean, which is a negative, like zero. No opinion used to mean it's just terrible. Carvana has now gone to the second part of their. They are now the inventor of the car vending machine. Now, I just love – I had a problem many, many years ago with gumball machines.
Yeah, only now you have a problem with Carvana.
Well, I do because I could never get the gumball that I wanted out of the gumball machine. You get the gumball
that drops.
Right.
Well, probably it's about the same thing with Carvana.
I understand. That's my – but that's possibly why I –
In all fairness, I would like to go through the process of Carvana, and I know we've talked about this before.
Yeah,
I mean,
Marshall actually saw a Carvana
truck.
Delivering.
Truck. Yeah, I've seen one or two in.
I want to see them pick up because I know that this generation, basically, when I say this generation, has improved the whole return, like just return it without. Return to sender aspect.
Yeah, well, that's
but,
all the online purchasing.
Exactly.
That's a mentality. You don't like it, send it back.
Except that, by the way, when you get into the next level of statistics and numbers from online sales, their return rate is so they report their sales, but you don't net out the return rate, which is astonishing.
I worked for a company that did online sales and allowed returns and on a big scale, and I'm very well aware of that percentage.
I don't know how many people are. All right, so you're going to go through the Carvana process and see what drops out of the car vending machine.
Yeah, I'm still a big Auto Trader fan. I think if you're going to go online and do some research, it's pretty straightforward. You know, you pick your you can do searches any which way you want, and you can determine the first thing is determining the radius you want to look.
What's the difference? Because there are so many different.
Auto Trader, Cars.com. I find Cars and Auto Trader to be very similar, and actually, it's interesting because Cars.com. Has a fairly new major shareholder that is putting pressure on the board at cars.com to either reinvent themselves slightly or
go away
or sell out.
Who would they sell to? Because the reason that I'm asking that is again tangential, but I noticed that a really wonderful weather it's a place that I've gone to for radar because it was too intuitive for me. For years, I went to it yesterday. They have sold out to a major, not AccuWeather. They've sold out to someone else. And they've said basically same great product. Well, it might be the same great product in their hope for synergy. But in terms of functionality, I gave up because I couldn't find what I was looking for.
Yeah, there are a few weather apps. I don't know which one you refer to, but I mean.
But it just went to something that was really efficient and that you could go, this is what it is.
Well, I can tell you that, again, I really like Auto Trader. It's pretty straightforward. Whether you use it on a computer, whether you use it on your phone, it pretty much works the same way. You can save the searches. You can email the searches. You know, as soon as you find something, you email it to yourself or anybody else. And you can go back and look at it later and see if the car is sold. And I do that on a regular basis and find out how long cars have been sitting. And sometimes I do a search, I save a search, I go back 6 hours later and the car sold. Maybe it was had been on for 3 months, or maybe it was on for 6 hours and the car sold. I don't really know. And,
is there ever a date? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I think there is. Okay. I think the car, you know, it's a little like the real estate sites. I mean, it's like
Okay, and this has been on the market Realtor.com for 8 years, right?
And,
okay.
Yeah.
But cars.com, realtor.com, that makes, you know, obviously.
Yeah. But again, and you don't get the feel or the smell of the product, whether it's a house or a car.
But you can look at.
It's certainly something to look at. And if you're budget minded, you know, if you're a person, you say, I have $5,000 to spend on the car and this is what it needs to do. You know, I need an all-wheel drive because this, and you go to Auto Trader and you put a radius from your zip code. And you put maximum $5,000, and you say, "I want an SUV with all-wheel drive," and then you sort the search by number of miles, by price, by distance. So there are a lot of options.
And then, do you go look at it?
I'm not like Robin. I don't buy cars all the time.
I understand. I don't mean it like that. But having done that filtered search, wouldn't the next logical thing be
well,
to go?
Well, actually, I mean, I did the search when I bought my Volkswagen. I knew exactly what I wanted. I mean, I wanted one of three cars. I wanted a Volkswagen. I mean, unlike most people, but I knew that Dieselgate scandal was coming. So I wanted a Volkswagen diesel engine, and I was looking for Audi Q7s, Porsche Cayennes, and Volkswagen Touaregs. That was it. Those were the three vehicles. That was my search, and I happened to find a Touareg that was in Atlanta. And I kept on looking at others, and this was the best price, the least miles. It would have been a CPO, but a certified pre-owned, but they couldn't do it because that was just a hint that scandal was about to hit.
Right.
This was 2 years ago, And when I figured out that, you know, I made one big, big mistake. You know, I asked the sales guy, I said, okay, there's one thing I need to know. Was it a smoker's car? And that is the one thing that it is very hard to find out online if it was a smoker's car or not. And that is critical to a lot of people, including myself.
Why is that a mistake? Because you have to ask.
If you don't know, you have to ask, and it's not that people will lie, but, you know, the salesman said, well, let me go check. And he came back on the phone. He said, no, it's not a smoker's car. Okay, well, when I got to the dealership, so then I flew to Atlanta, and they picked me up. It was a smoker's car. And it was, you know, it had been a dealership's car, so it wasn't smoked in very often, but once in a while you can get a whiff of, and I think it was mostly cigar smell. I think some guy, it was a courtesy car in a Bentley dealership. So I think the guys who
did get in there. Yeah, but question, how do you get that smell out? You don't. A lot of Febreze.
Actually, I changed the air filter in my. I think it's. I don't smell it anymore.
Okay.
So.
How long have you had it?
2 years.
Okay.
You know. So, and I haven't smelled it for a while. So, you know, and I've treated the seats, but I also treated the headliner, and I'd like to think the smell is gone.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody may walk in the car one day and say, "Hmm, I smell something here."
Right.
But.
But the point is. You have to know what not you have
yeah,
to.
There are a few things that you have to be very aware of, but you know, and you get a Carfax on Auto Trader as well, and all the other sites too. So you pull up the Carfax, and you know the Carfax is a pretty good indication of what the car has gone through. If it wasn't an accident, it tells you what the accident was. It gives you the history of who the owners were. And now on Auto Trader, most, you know, Carfax are often free. So you just get the Carfax and look it up.
You sound like that fox, but we're out of time.
I'm sorry.
He is Jay DeMarket. This is Car Keys.